Welcome to Conversations Live. For more than a decade, we've brought you the best in books, entertainment, celebrity interviews, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us first. Now celebrating 17 years of broadcasting success, here's your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again, both for our radio audience in Mississippi and all that audience tuning in around the world. We're glad you all could be with us as well. You know, it's hard to believe it was 5 years ago. 5 years ago, I had author Chip Jacobs on our program. We were discussing his book at the time, Strange as It Seems. He's back with us today, though, to discuss his writing journey, but also what it's been like for him to share it with you. And he's celebrating a new book called The Darkest Glare. We'll get into that with Chip as well. A lot of research went into this book, so we'll talk to Chip not only about what inspired it, but also what he hopes readers this year are able to take away from it. Chip, hello to you, and welcome back to Conversations Live.
Oh, it's great to be back with you, Cyrus. Thanks so much for the invite. I'm excited to be here.
Well, look, the pleasure's definitely all mine. So, look, a lot has happened for you in the 5 years since you've been on, but again, like I said, you have the new book out, and you are able to actually be able to spend some time with readers, which I know authors have been missing for the past year. Let's talk about this experience for you, first of all, Chip. What has it been like for you to spend so much time writing these books and then to see people appreciate them the way that they are?
As a former journalist who transitioned to being an author, it's extremely gratifying. You know, when you are a reporter at a newspaper, you just burrow into the story of the minute. The next day or the next week, you get instant gratification when your story appears, and you can take pride in that. Being an author is very different. It's like going into a cave, sunless cave, writing something you hope other people will be interested in or engrossed by. But you never know. And the author is also involved in the commerce of marketing it, which is something I'm very ambivalent about. But it's well worth it. I left daily journalism to write something more contextual and longer lasting. And so I wouldn't have it any other way.
You bring up a really good point here, Chip. And I think it is, I have talked to journalists who wish they could spend more time with the story, or wish that they could give a story the attention it deserves. Is that also one of the rewards that you have, that you're on no one else's deadline, as it were, per se, when it comes to being able to really tell the story you want to tell?
It's a funny thing. Yes, it is. It feels not self-indulgent, but it's very intellectually satisfying to be able to do that. You know, but I miss every day the camaraderie of being in a newsroom where there's people running around. There's occasional yelling, some drama. You never know what the day is going to bring. What Aaron Rodgers called the beautiful mystery of the future. Those things were so adrenalizing. But being a writer, an author is just a whole nother set of emotions. And much to my agent's and publicist's dismay, I like to skip around in genres. I'm now going to be staying basically in the fiction world. I published my first novel, a historical novel about my hometown of Pasadena, California, and its mysterious historic bridge. It did very well. And I think that is where my journey has led me. All my years of reporting nonfiction books, that's where my heart is now, is just plumbing my imagination and coming up with weird stories. The book I'm talking about now is something that actually traces back to my old reporting days, and it's something I had to see to an end.
So let's talk about that, because you mentioned, of course, the things that you enjoy about, of course, that journalistic life. But I think also the thing that you're still able to do in the book, especially as we're talking about The Darkest Glare, is able to do the research, to go into the history. Talk to us about that love of history, the love of truth. When did that first show itself for you?
I'll tell you, I was somebody who in his 20s just adored being kind of a professional student. I spent 5 years at USC in the mid-80s I went into the business major, realized that wasn't for me. People always told me I should pursue writing, and I heeded that call. I found myself just never happier than in the bowels of the library. I went to grad school, the same thing. I just loved going through books, going through periodicals, trying to see patterns other people didn't see. And on this book, which is a true crime book that I tried to write in more of a fiction fashion, God, I was a pig in slop. You know, when somebody would say, here, check out this court deposition, here's this police report, interview this person. I got such a rush when I knew something nobody else didn't, or I could see the lines of a story forming kind of like sinew in a muscle. And sometimes I think the research was my most joyous moment of the adventure.
Yeah. And I think, too, as people look at what you've been able to do, as I mentioned, you were on this program first 5 years ago with Strange as It Seems, and now with this book, you know, I think your attention for detail definitely comes out, but I think also your love of telling the story. That's why I was interested when you said, you know, being able to take something that was true and real and then to write it in such a way, because I think that is what draws the reader in, and I think especially these days we love that connection. So talk to us about this particular story. You talked a little bit about the personal connection, as it were, to the location, but what was it that made you say this is a story I definitely want to devote a book to?
Very good question. In 1998, I was walking. I had left journalism to work on the story that you eventually read, Strange as It Seems. But I was still freelancing, and I was walking along Hollywood Boulevard with one of my best newspaper sources ever. He had just helped me land the investigative article of my career. And I thought he was going to give me another tip for me to freelance. And he said, did you know I had a double murderer chasing me? Those are the words. Do you know that I had a double murderer chasing me? And I instantly didn't believe him, thought he was pulling my leg. I thought he was exaggerating. And that comment marked my immersion into this crazy story about a murder-for-hire corporation created by a very vulturous person who knew how to enlist kind of bottom scrapers to do his dirty deeds. And the set of heroes, including the source, Jerry Spiderman, who was this little nerdy, brilliant space planner who outfoxed a killer. And the more I got into it, the more I realized Jerry didn't even realize the surreal events circling around him, almost like sharks in the water. And it was a story where you could see a collision of three different parts of Southern California creating this massive pileup, and you didn't know who was going to walk away. Jerry came from kind of a throwaway section of Los Angeles called North Hollywood, which is nothing like the real Hollywood. It's kind of this blue-collar bedroom community north of a freeway. The victim in the case was Jerry's former partner, who was a suave, charismatic, slick-talking person who tried to cheat the wrong guy. And then there was the mastermind of the crime, who hailed from more the eastern Badlands part of Southern California in terms of his friendships and spirit. And you never would have believed Jerry could survive these other people. And it was kind of like a murder triangle. And yet there was heroes in the story, anti-heroes, but there was heroes in those who were able to maintain their optimism and spark despite having monsters outside their door.
Wow. I think, too, in talking about the way the story reads, I think that is the thing about it, too. You're able to bring us into it, and I think, and to make us be able to see it, to feel it. Is that also part of the gift that you think that you have that has shown itself both in journalism and in books like this, Chip, the way of being able to bring the reader along for the ride?
It's funny you say that, because when you're a reporter, at least when I was, newspapers, especially the bigger ones, all back then wanted every story outside of the feature department to have the same feel, the same voice, that same kind of newspaper, dependent clause, action verbs, emotion-free phraseology. And I buckled against it. And it took me a long time to develop my own voice, where I could write visually, I could break some grammatical rules, and I could use wit and observation without knowing an editor was going to zap it out of my copy. And it just took a lot of practice. And as I've learned, Cyrus, you don't develop your voice until you establish inside of you an equilibrium between your head and your heart. If you write with your heart, it's just going to be all id and impulse and kind of unchecked emotion on the page. If you write with your head, it's going to be sterile and surgical. So it's this constant battle inside your head. And I think all your life experiences create your voice. It takes a lot of hard work to learn to write in a more creative sense after you've gone through journalism school and you've almost been programmed to write in a somewhat robotic fashion.
Yeah. So with The Darkest Glare, what was the surprising component the most when you were researching what would become this book, Chip? What surprised you the most about the real life scenarios of these individuals?
We don't want to believe there's assassins, murder for hires, hitmen, unexplained deaths. It can rock your sense about the safety of civilization. I think that's what blew my mind. These things happen all the time. And that strange unsolved murder that might command 3 or 4 paragraphs in a newspaper, that could have been a professional hit job, especially in the late 70s and other dark eras in America. That's what I couldn't believe. You know, the person that engineered the murder at the heart of this story had killed other people, and if he had his way, he would have continued doing murder for hires. And what was crazy is that between the time he killed Jerry's partner and the time he was arrested, he was doing carpentry work. He was planning to go after other real estate people. The LAPD was building its case. But, you know, it seemed like a wild carte blanche for assassins. And if you try to go to bed at night and forget that, it's tough. And I did dream of these people outside my own window. And you just have to accept life is a little more random than your sense of order wants to conceive.
Yeah, really good point. And I think that is what makes a book like this so riveting. I want to say for those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're excited to welcome Chip Jacobs back to our program today. We're talking with him not only about his writing journey, but also the skills that have served him well as a journalist in writing books like The Darkest Glare and what he wants you to take away from him. So I mentioned you're now, of course, being able to spend time with your readers. Chip, I noticed when I was on social media, I think it was Instagram, you were talking about an upcoming event. What has that been like for you to kind of get back to a place where you can connect with your readers and discuss these books with them?
It's been a strange experience. I wrote my historical novel, which is going to be where I'm going to go in the fiction world from now on. It was about 4 months before CNN had a news break saying it's official, the World Health Organization has characterized COVID as a pandemic. And it lopped off about a third of my book events. I have nothing to complain about after all the carnage in the world. And so I had to try to transition to doing digital events, using social media more. And I'm not a gigantic enthusiast of social media because I think it's a net negative on the world. That's just my point of view. But I had to adapt. You either adapt or perish. And so I did do a lot of book events virtually last night in rolling out this book instead of going to my hometown bookstore of Romans and hopefully looking out into a standing room only group and having fun and interacting. I'm looking, you know, at a screen at my MC of the night, and just a list of people that have logged on. It's really kind of AI meets literary, and it's a strange experience. It's no matter what you say, it's not the same as interacting face to face with human beings, because when you interact with people directly, you read so much from their expression and the light in their eyes, and that's all absent here. So you still have to put on your best darn show, and I would throw my heart into it if I had one person or I had 1,000. And I was very happy over 100 people turned out. This is a weird, obscure story, and you just don't know what you're going to get. It's still the same idea, though. You're trying to convince people to spend 7 or 8 hours with a story you've been working on for years. In this case, longer for me, off and on.
And I think it makes it just that more enjoyable, Chip. I know I can say that for myself, and I think it will for others as well. Again, everyone, Chip Jacobs has been our guest. Chip, I'm going to gloss over what you said about going in the direction of fiction, and it's all because I don't want to think about that right now. I want to think about The Darkest Glare that's out now, and I want our audience to go and get it. Right now, you guys can get it through our friends at Amazon.com, or, of course, you can order it from your favorite local bookstore as well. Chip, since you are being able to spend this time with your readers, how can they stay connected with you?
Well, the best way is mental telepathy. But if that does not work, they can go to my website, chipjacobs.com. I have a Amazon page, obviously. They can check out. I'm really hoping folks support their local independent bookstores that have taken a shellacking during the pandemic, and also, you know, also from the whole digital retail world. So that's where I would suggest they go. I just want to say one thing. You know, it was a mental whiplash going from writing a novel that tried to conjure up whimsy and imagination and a little magical realism to writing a dark story about LA of the late 1970s, a time that really reminds me of today, where there was anger in the air, mistrust, division. And it's sometimes I kind of wish I could throw myself back to 1913 instead of 1979. But these are really interesting characters. Even the worst of what I call the human reptiles in the story, they're human beings, and I really, in writing this, wanted to understand them. Nobody as a child thinks, I'm going to grow up and be a murderer. I'm going to grow up and take people hostage. How do they turn bad? What curdled them? I'm always fascinated, Cyrus, by the why. That's my favorite question, why?
I share that as well with you, Chip, which is why, again, I do think the book is something that people will enjoy because there is such a connection. I think they will take away from it. Chip, excited for you. Thank you so much for joining us again and looking forward to our next conversation together.
Thank you, Cyrus. You always make me feel very comfortable, and you ask really good questions. So consider it done.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live. Now let's go make today amazing. Take care.